three speakers in the Western Hemisphere, so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of April 19, 2008. She has been continually in service as a secretary, a sponsor for women, and she is very active in the Young People's Group. Her AA motto is progress, not perfection. May I have the envelope, please? The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Hillary M. of Visalia.
Hi, I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me today. This is my first time to do a speaker meeting. So get the CD. It could be worth something someday. Okay, so I'll just start at the beginning at where I was at. And I was a late drinker, especially for a lot of us who come into the Young People's Meeting, who come into the program young. I didn't start drinking until I was 17. But I made up for lost time really quickly. But 2 weeks into that first night, my first drunk, I was carrying around a bottle of vodka in my backpack on my college campus. And just felt like that was a perfectly normal thing to do. And I feel like there's probably various reasons besides that I'm an alcoholic that I jumped right in, and that was probably growing up in a very conservative household where my parents didn't let me do a lot of the things that a lot of the other kids that I knew, even other Christian kids who went to my church, got to do. And so once I got to college, I was like a kid in a candy store, and the candy was alcohol at the beginning and other stuff throughout that career of drinking that I had. And within a year of drinking, I had done enough damage to my emotional self that I actually tried to get sober my first time on my own when I was 18. And I was living in near Houston, Texas at the time. And I got sober, and I stayed sober from alcohol for 18 months, but really just sober for 9 months from everything. But I didn't really work a program. I got to this infamous step four and never did it. And I don't actually remember much about anything that happened at those meetings that I went to that first time around, except for that in Texas you can still smoke inside buildings, and I smoked every 15 minutes. And the meetings were only an hour there, which was, you know, a lot of the ones here an hour and a half, and I had to get used to that this time around. But I did a lot of geographics. I graduated college. I started drinking again, obviously, because I only stayed sober for 18 months. And it's really hard to stay sober on a college campus, especially the initials of my college campus were SFA, and everybody called it School for Alcoholics. So I know I wasn't the only one there. It was kind of like, I guess here is kind of like Chico State or something like that. And so I graduated, I moved to a small town, started working at a job. And when I say small town, I mean there's 1.5 bars there. And I didn't like, I mean the half was a trucker bar at a hotel, like so it was just really a half bar. And so those were your choices to drink. It was in East Texas, and you couldn't get, I learned the hard way that you couldn't even get alcohol on Easter Sundays. Every other Sunday you could, but not on Easter Sundays. You couldn't get liquor on Sunday, period. So you had to plan your drinking, which, you know, as a good alcoholic, I could do really well. And I just got really lonely starting then, and I bounced around a lot after that. Well, I went to another town and got another job, and then I decided to move out to California, and that was my big geographic. And when I got to California, I moved to Fresno first, and I had no job, and I found things to do, and then 3 months after there, somehow I got a job in Visalia. And this is, I was one of those high-functioning alcoholics, I guess you could say, because I was good at what I did, and I graduated college at the top of my class, and I was able to get these jobs that weren't as good as maybe they could have been if I wasn't drinking, I'll never know. But I had the car, I had a place to live, I was doing fine, I wasn't in debt, but emotionally, I was just at the bottom of everything all the time, especially by the time I got out to California. And that's that incomprehensible demoralization. And I know I experienced that for a long time before I got sober. And it was off and on. And I went back and forth between thinking that I was really great and nobody should hate me, and then also thinking that I was terrible and everybody should hate me. And there was no middle ground there, no real self-esteem or confidence. And I did really hate myself. And I feel like that's something that I know I can relate to when a lot of other people talk about it in their speeches. So by the time I got to Visalia, I didn't have many friends here. And every time I tried to make friends, it was with people who drank. Because I didn't like to hang out with people who didn't drink like I did. I preferred to hang out with people who drank or used worse than I did so that I could feel better about myself. And that resulted in a lot of strange circumstances that takes you to people and places that you wouldn't ever have hung out with before, your yets, and you keep on knocking them down. And eventually I just started staying home and drinking there so that nobody would judge me, because I had, that's kind of a big part of my story, is even before I started drinking, I had a big thing about what other people thought about me and if they were judging me. And I wanted everybody to like me all the time, which we know isn't possible. And so by the time I was here, I was only here for a few months before I got a DUI. And I actually count myself lucky that night, because I barely drank anything by our alcoholic standards, which was, I think, a big glass of wine and one whiskey and Coke, and I had a .14. I went the wrong way down Court Street. I turned back around real quick, but it didn't count. Because they'd already seen me, because it was like, you know, 11:30 or something on a Friday or Saturday night, and there's lots of policemen out. And, you know, went to jail, did my little 11 hours, and got out, and of course I got out and I drank over it, because that's the obvious solution to a big problem like that. And I started went to court, you know, they make you wait a couple months for that, or a few weeks, and started getting that all straightened out. And in the process, another thing that went hand in hand with my drinking was bad decisions, and those bad decisions usually revolved around the opposite sex. And this one particular bad decision, I was literally walking back from the liquor store when I met him, and I think within a week I was pregnant, and that's how I got sober. I do recommend it to some extent. You know, it obviously comes with some baggage, but it, you know, some people get sober and they can't go to sleep at night. I had no problem sleeping at night. But I did get sober pretty much after I found out I was pregnant. I didn't drink anymore. I did do something else. So my sobriety date is not with my last drunk, and I don't really remember what my last drunk was. So it's not necessarily your typical. I even had like a guy at the DUI school tell me that I wasn't really an alcoholic because I got sober because I got pregnant. I was like, no, you don't understand. That's just God doing for me what I can do for myself. Because, you know, getting a DUI and having an unplanned, well, somewhat unplanned pregnancy with somebody who isn't capable of raising a child with me doesn't sound like the best plan. But we often... Why didn't I cry? I forgot tissues. But often, the best plan is not the one that we can make for ourselves. And that's what I've found out in this program. It's just so amazing to be able to believe that, because I used to just think that everything had to go the way that I wanted it to go. And today I realize that when I try to make everything go my way, it usually ends up going the way that I really don't want it to go, because I'm trying to force other people to do things that I can't make them do, because I can't make somebody think something about me or even do something, really, without the circumstances turning tragic. So here I am, a single mom. I'm still just pregnant at this time, and I come into the program. I took a little while, not terribly long, but about 3 or 4 months into the program to find a sponsor. And I quickly got a support group around me. And that's just been amazing. And a lot of them are here tonight, and so that's really cool. Oh, thank you. Okay, good. was really cool because by the time that I had my baby, the father was completely pretty much out of the picture because he's an alcoholic addict himself. I mean, I couldn't have him around because he was violent. I had a restraining order against him and all that good stuff that happens when you associate with people that you normally wouldn't unless you were drinking or using. And so by the time I had this baby, it was just really amazing to see all these people rally around me. I had no family here. All my family's in Texas. Well, they're like everywhere else now. And this has just become my family. And I just think that's just what's one of the great, amazing things about AA. But it's so much more than just a social club or even people who are going to help you out, who will give you rides, who will babysit your baby for you. Because, I mean, it's a spiritual way of life. And I had a huge problem with God when I came in. I don't know how long. I think I spent longer on step two than I did on step four, even. And that's because I just couldn't come to believe in a higher power than myself. And I started off with, okay, what can I believe in that's a higher power than myself? I was even reading through the book again, through Bill's story the other day with the sponsee, and just was like, you know, that's what caught him. He was kind of in the same place as me. He wasn't necessarily about to put faith in and have a personal relationship with a higher power. So that was a slow process for me, and that's why I say progress, not perfection, because if this was a program where you had to get it perfect, then I wouldn't be here today, because that's one of the reasons why I drank, because I wanted to be perfect. Because I grew up feeling like, whether or not this is their intention, are they going to reset it? My parents often put forth a very high standard that was, in my eyes, perfection. My older sister. And I couldn't meet that standard, you know, because I was just a different person. And it's part of why I drank, because drinking allowed me to say, fuck it, you know? Like, I don't have to worry about this. I don't have to be this person that you think I should be. And I couldn't just do that on my own without drinking, because I didn't have any faith in myself, and I didn't have any faith in a higher power. And the only higher power that I'd ever known was the one that had been forced on my throat for 17 years of my life. I went to private Christian school. I was the top 25% of my graduating class because there was only 4 people in my class and I was valedictorian. I lived in Houston and I went to this tiny, tiny, tiny little Christian school that was like a big dysfunctional family. And I didn't learn a lot about living life there in a regular way. You know, I just learned about this idealistic Christian way of living life, and it might work fine for some people, but it wasn't what was going to work for me. And by the time I got to college and I found the hippies and the theater students and the art students, and that's who I hung out with, I quickly learned about other religions or atheism or agnosticism, and it all sounded better to me than what I had grown up with. So I just had an ambiguous idea of what was out there, and once I got to that step two, I had to decide to have a less ambiguous idea, though I started out pretty vague, which was everything that was good in the universe was my higher power, and then I went from there. And I still think that. I just think that now I don't know what's good in the universe because God has his plan. And we think that, you know, unicorns and rainbows are good when there might be something really terrible that turns out being a good thing, like unplanned pregnancy or a DUI. So one of the things that really helped me when I first got here is that there was a young person's program, because the first time around that I came in, there was no other young people in the area. There might have been in the area I was in, I just wasn't aware of it. And so to be here in California, the like promised land of AA, there are so many meetings here, you have no idea. Because when I was trying to stay sober in East Texas, when I went back to college, because I had gotten sober in Houston, then I went back to college in East Texas, and I couldn't even understand the people who were talking. I'm from Texas, but different parts have different accents. When I was, and they're like all smoking and no teeth, and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And that's one of the reasons why I went back out, is because I didn't want to go to those meetings, because I couldn't necessarily relate to the people who were there. Not that somebody has to be just like you for you to relate to them, but I just wasn't ready. I'd only been drinking for a year, but just the fact that I've been drinking for a year and I thought I needed to get sober kind of shows you the kind of alcohol I was dealt with. And I still had my car and I still had my job and I still wasn't in debt and all those things by the time I got sober, but I can tell you that my emotional bank was completely empty and that I had nothing left to give there, and I wanted to die. I just wasn't in a place yet where I was willing to do it, but I know it would not have been long. I think for me, it might not have been institutions or gel, it would have just probably been death by my own hand. And it wouldn't have been the slow one because I couldn't take that anymore. I think I would have killed myself. And if you drank the way I did and did the things that I did and hated yourself the way that I did, you probably have felt the same way at times in your drinking and using career. So the young people's AA group, I'm just going to talk a little bit about that because it's just an integral part of my sobriety. And so are the women's groups. If you're a guy, go to the guy meetings. And if you're a woman, go to the women's meetings because you're really going to find the people who keep you sober there. My sponsor has a potluck for all the sponsors and their sponsees, all her sponsees and their grand sponsees, and everybody, and we go once a month, and it's just something I didn't get somewhere else. I remember my mom saying when I was first having my son, you really need to go somewhere where you can get support, like a church. And I was just like, you don't understand. I don't know if there's churches that would give me the kind of support that I get here in AA, you know. If you're willing to reach out and ask for help and not be scared to make those relationships, which I was, because I was scared of people judging me for a long time. You know, taking that leap of faith, because that's what AA is all about, is faith. And I did take that leap of faith to the higher power, and I got past the step two, and I got all the way to my step 12, and it is definitely progress. It's not perfection, because it's well known amongst the people who are at the meetings that I go to that I cannot do anything on a daily basis, like meditate or pray in the mornings, because I try, but I'm just not there yet. And maybe it's because I'm only 30 and I only have 4 years sober. Maybe it's because I have 2 kids now and a fiance, and I can't seem to keep track of anything. I can't go to the gym every day. I can't do everything every day, but I got to be okay with that right now because it's progress, not perfection. And still got one more time. I got one more to talk about. And that is what I have today. You know, I still have the house. I still have the car. I still have the job, which I've been promoted since then, and things seem to be looking up there. Everything hasn't gone exactly the way that I wanted it to go. I wanted a nice white-collar guy who could spell Saturday right. And I got myself a grease monkey who can't spell to save his life, and I love him so much. And he couldn't be here tonight, so I can talk about him. But he's going to get the CD. But that's just one of those, you don't know what God has in store for you, and you got to take it, you know, one day at a time and have faith. And if you're doing everything right, working your steps and all that, you don't know what to get. I also got a stepdaughter that I have no idea how to deal with her, and it's just, you know, on a daily basis, I got to figure it out, and I don't do that perfect at all with my own son or my stepdaughter. And so it's just learning about life, and I just feel like when growing up, when I was in that school, and I don't know if it would have mattered where I was, I thought a lot when I was drinking that it was my parents' fault for raising me the way that they did and putting me in the school that they put me in and putting the kind of standards that they put on me, that's why I drink. But looking back, I think I could have been miserable anywhere because I was worried about what everybody thought about me all the time, and I didn't have friends because I judged people is what it came down to, and that's why I was worried about people judging me. And what I now have from this program is that I don't have to do that. I can just love people for who they are. I mean, I just had an incident at work the last couple of days where I spoke up to someone about their behavior, which is their manager, and they're treating their employees badly, and I'm not their employee. I'm kind of a co-worker manager with them. And she didn't take it well, and she started acting crazy on me. And I didn't know what to do, and then finally I was completely honest with her, and that calmed her down some for my part, but it calmed me down more than anything, because that just being able to be honest with people and seeing my side of the street and not have to be manipulative, not have to play games, because I really thought that was the only choice that I have, was to try to do that. And I didn't even know I was doing it. It's just to get my way, I thought, was the only choice that I had. I didn't realize that I did have a choice. I have a choice not to drink. I have a choice to treat people badly or to treat them the right way. And today I get to make those choices when before it seemed like only the choice that I felt was going to fix the problem right now or was going to have the outcome that I wanted was the only thing that existed. And that's not true. I just don't like those things like boundaries. I didn't like boundaries, but I didn't like what happened when I didn't have them either. So I learned when I got in the program how to set up boundaries, you know, even with people like my mom. And I love my parents today, and I can accept them for who they are. And anybody around me, even if they're acting terrible to me, at least I can look at them and say, you know, like the book says, you're a sick person. And I make my mistakes, and they make their mistakes, and this is why I'm a grateful alcoholic, because I get to work a program that helps me work on my character defects, and sometimes I feel like a lot of the people out there who aren't alcoholics but who are suffering from these character defects, I kind of feel sorry for them because they don't have this life and death immediacy to their choices, and to, you've got to decide now that you're going to change your life around, because this is just not about not drinking. It's about changing who you are and improving on those character defects and trusting, turning your life and will over to a higher power of your own understanding. And it's so nice. I mean, I was looking for a house a while back. We thought that's what we wanted, and everything fell through every time we looked at a house. And it was so nice just to be able to say, well, that wasn't the house for us, because it would have worked out if we were supposed to have it, and then walk away from it and not feel bad, because you just never know. It might have seemed like the best house in the world, or it might seem like the best guy in the world or girl or job or whatever, and you don't get it, and you just fall apart. But when there can be something so much better in store, and something so much better might not be a better job, it might be a lesson that you needed to learn. And that one I don't like. I mean, but I do, you know, I don't like it at the time, but when I get to look back on it, I say, hey, that was something that I didn't know before, and now I know, like, now I know to approach my coworker differently than I did before, or to take a different route as far as, like, what just happened at work today. So today, I'm not the most patient person in the world. I'm not the best at meditating on a daily basis, even though I really like the results of meditation, just like I like the results of going to the gym every day, but that's not ever going to happen. But I can try, and I can be okay with who I am today. And that's one thing, too. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were so worried about doing their fourth step, which they're on their first step, so I'm like, don't even be thinking about that yet. But because all the stuff that was going to drag up. I said, but you don't understand, the other part of the first step is all the good stuff about yourself. Like, we don't talk about that enough, but it's an inventory, and it includes what you do well. And there's things that I do well. And now today I can look in the mirror and say, hey, I like this person. And it's not just that I write well or I do other things well like that, but that, you know, I'm a loyal person, and I'm compassionate, and I care about people, and I'm considerate, you know? But then I think about that, that's things that I do, and that's not like what my fiance does. He's not like me. His strengths are in different places, so I have to remember that when, you know, he doesn't do everything exactly the way that I think he should, because I would have done it that way. Like, use my $50 a day to cover up the windshield on my car to keep it from freezing over. I didn't yell at him about that, by the way. That's progress. Anyway, I don't think I've hit my time yet, but I can't think of anything else to say, so I don't know if we take questions or if I... So that's my story, because I only drank for like 6 years, so it was hard, and it was fast, and it was ugly for that time. So if there's any questions, I'll take them. Otherwise, I guess we'll wrap up. There's no question. Anybody wants me to talk anymore? Bye. I think it was just stop thinking that things were coincidences and going ahead and giving that credit to that higher power. And then when I was challenged with life, because life happens, being able to take a step back and give it up. And that was the big thing, was giving it up and letting things happen, or just even praying about it and seeing what would happen. I mean, I took the short bus to the God thing, and I still don't even really like saying God. I like higher power better, so I'm still there with that, and it's probably just a mental thing. It doesn't matter, but I haven't come up with any better names than higher power. And it's just a slow thing. It's just a comfort now to know that I'm not in charge of my life, because when I'm in charge of my life, I make really bad decisions, like drinking or, you know, going out with somebody and spending the night at their house where I don't even know their last name and waking up and not knowing where I am. I mean, that's what I did when I drank. So now, definitely don't do that anymore. And I get to give even just the littlest things over, whether it's on a daily basis or a moment-by-moment basis. And it's hard to say. It seems it's kind of like when somebody loses a lot of weight and all of a sudden one day you realize it, you know, you're like, wow, you look great. You know, you lost 40 pounds. And but for that person, it happens so little by day that they didn't realize it until they got there. So, I mean, it's just, I think, applying the program. I call my sponsor every day, every weekday, and it's just a nice way to start the day. She said we didn't have to do that anymore, but it makes me get out of bed, too, so I like to sleep in. And going to meetings and maintaining the relationships and being of service. You know, I haven't had a lot of luck with sponsees, but I got one now. I'm hoping for the best, as always. It's hard being young and being in the program for lots of reasons, you know. And so if you are young, I want you to know that it's possible. And we do have this young people's meetings, which I can make these. It's on Saturday night from 6 to 7 o'clock on North Church Street, 319 North Church Street at the Carpenters Union Hall. And we have people there who got sober when they were like 19. We have people who come in who have like 25 years sober, who got sober when they were in their 20s. And it's just really cool to see. And it's possible. So don't think that you're too young. Just think, are you miserable enough when you're out there drinking? Because that's what it's about. It's not about, hey, you still got more alcohol to spill and drink. So, any more questions?
Is there something that you've done that really frightened you before you did it?
That really frightened me before I did it? Nothing that comes to mind right away. Oh, our relationships are difficult. At least for me. Dating's kind of scary, sober dating. And just like when I was drinking, I just can't seem to stay away from alcoholics, but at least this one's one in recovery. So, I like somebody who understands me and my disease, but that presents its own set of challenges, because you know that we aren't easy to deal with. So, but there's a couple of meetings too for people in AA or with somebody else in AA. But I can't say there was any one momentous thing in recovery that was especially scary, you know, coming and speaking up here. It's kind of scary. but, you know.
How long were you sober in AA before you got to
I didn't know about the young people's group, and when somebody told me about it, I went, and I want to say, I go by how many months pregnant I was. I was like 5 years pregnant, so I probably was only like 3 months sober, 3-4 months sober. So, but it's a good group, and it's not just for young people, it's for everybody. We won't kick you out if you look too old. So. Yes, I was waiting to make sure there was any more questions. About service? Okay. Well, I mean, it's a good way to get your butt to a meeting is if you know you have to be there. I know for me, it's accountability. I mean, I don't mean to make so many parallels between the gym and AA, but it is a lot alike, because you're taking care of your spiritual and emotional self when you're AA, and when you go to the gym, you're taking care of your body, and they end up with a lot of the same type of results. And if you don't If I know I tell somebody that I'll meet them at the gym, I'm sure to go. And I know if I'm telling somebody that I'll come do the coffee or be the secretary at a meeting, I'm sure to go. And especially in the young people's meeting, I mean, I'm 30. I don't feel young anymore. I don't like staying up past 10:30 that often. And I learned that really quick the last time I went to ASCEPA, which I'll talk about in a little bit, that I was not ready to party all night any longer. But at the same time, I got sober when I was 25, which is still, I think, pretty young, and I wasn't ready to stop partying at that point. And I know a lot of people feel that way, so they learn how to party when they're young and party sober, which seems impossible, but it's not. Speaking of, segue, but they're going to have a disco karaoke dance party this Saturday, and it's actually put on by the Fresno Young Peoples and Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's going to be here in Visalia at 210, which is at the corner of Center and Locust, downtown Visalia, and it starts at 7 p.m. with a speaker and the disco karaoke dance party. Kind of scary. Starts after that. And what it's all about is ACIPA, which is the All California Young People's and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a convention that happens once a year. And actually, the first one was held like 40 years ago in Fresno. And now it's finally back to Fresno again. And it's March 14th, which is Thursday. It starts Thursday night, and it goes through Sunday, March 17th. They're doing pre-registration right now, which is like $15, and it's non-stop meetings and speakers and panels and dances and comedians, and it's just on and on. People go and they drink Rockstar for 4 days straight and smoke like 20 packs of cigarettes. It's kind of fun to watch. They break elevators and they do a lot of the same things they would do when they were drinking, but it's what you expect when a whole bunch of alcoholic teenagers long through their 30s get together and party. There's about somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people attend this event. So what's convenient is you don't have to go get a hotel and stay overnight. It's in Fresno. You could just pop on over there and go. So if you're interested in registering, go to www.2013.acypaa.org. So this will be up here somewhere if you want to look at it. And then next month, our group, which is TookiePaw, Tulare County Young People's and Alcoholics Anonymous, is going to have a movie night where we're going to show the Bill W. It's a new documentary. And we're just taking donations, and the donations will go towards paying for scholarships to register young people to go to ACIPA. So that is on February 16th at 7:15 p.m., which is Saturday right after the young people's meeting at the same place where the young people meeting is at. So that is all. Thank you.